Hello, I'm Dr. Richard Friend. Taking control of and improving your health requires the most relevant and timely health information available. And University Medical Center is here to help with facts and advice about important health topics that you care about. We know that your health matters.
Welcome to another edition of Health Matters. My name is Mike Royer. Joining us today is Dr. Sushin Shenoy. Did I pronounce your first name right?
Yes,
I just asked you a second ago how to say it. Did I get it right?
Yes, you did. Sushin Thank you for Shenoy. Having me.
He's assistant professor here at the University Medical Center at the University of Alabama. His specialty is obstetrics and gynecology, and minimal surgery is a specialty too. That's relatively new, not something we've talked about on Health Matters before. If you're being operated on, there's no such thing as minimal surgery. You know, it would be major if it were me. But what kind of areas are able to be done by what is classified as minimal surgery?
Right, so what I specialize in is minimally invasive gynecological surgery. And you know, just to give you a little history of surgery, back in the day, whenever we had to have surgery, it was a large incision that was made on the patient. Yeah. The patient had to stay in the hospital for a couple of days to weeks. Very painful situation, full of different complications. Now, technology has gotten so well that now what we're able to do is we're able to take a small little camera about the size of your pen and then place it into the abdomen, and then making small 1 centimeter, even less than 1 centimeter incisions, we're able to introduce instruments and perform all sorts of surgeries. In my case, because I'm a gynecologist, hysterectomies, problems with cysts on your ovaries, removing myomectomies or those benign fibroids that are on women's ovaries and uteruses, and as well as doing vaginal reconstruction surgeries as well as urinary incontinence surgeries.
As you began your training in medical school, these surgeries are relatively new. When you started becoming aware of robotic and minimal invasive surgeries, is that what attracted you to it, going, oh my goodness, I want to be on the edge of cutting edge technology? Is that what made it exciting to you?
Right. I think when I was in med school and then also when I went into residency, I had really great mentors where I was. And they introduced me into minimally invasive surgery, robotic surgeries. And after that, I, you know, just grew an interest in, you know, helping patients and making it easier, removing those obstacles for patients. Because the biggest thing that people were worried about is with surgery, it's a big deal. You know, people are always really scared of that. But if you can reduce those barriers to people and then tell them, you know, you'll walk in that morning, and you'll be able to walk out that same afternoon after you have your surgery, it makes a world of difference for
Absolutely.
People.
Absolutely. Hysterectomy is still not classified as minimal. That's, even though you do it with new technology, that's still a major operation.
Correct? Right. It's considered a major surgery, yes. But we can do it minimally invasive by using laparoscopic techniques or robotic-assisted laparoscopic techniques.
So you do full hysterectomies
Correct.
With these techniques as well.
Correct.
Those people would be kept overnight or maybe even longer?
So it depends. Sometimes I even send my patients home the same day.
Really?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
You know, if we have patients that have, you know, concurrent medical conditions, we want to keep a little bit more of a close eye on them or a close watch. Sometimes I'll keep them until the next morning, and then they're able to go home. They're able to go home within 24 hours after they were admitted to the hospital.
That simply didn't exist 10, 15 years ago.
It did not.
It was not done.
No.
endometriosis, did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, you did.
Can you help women with that issue as well through
Yes.
this technique?
Yeah, so endometriosis is you know, very, very difficult for patients to deal with. You know, the pain and, you know, everything that goes with that. We're able to take care of patients laparoscopically, robotically for that, while still maintaining future fertility for those patients who want to have a family in the future.
You mentioned something a moment ago that caught my ear and maybe those of us watching and listening to you, and that is reconstruction for a female. Is that after hysterectomy? What is the need for that? When is it done and why is it done?
Right, that's a good question. So when I did my fellowship in minimally invasive GYN surgery, I also specialized with pelvic reconstruction and female incontinence surgeries. Pelvic organ prolapse usually affects women older in their age and older in their, you know, their life. And what it does is it's a herniation, or the pelvic organs or the uterus will actually come into the vagina. And so what I'm able to do from, you know, my fellowship and everything, all my training, is we're able to reconstruct the pelvis so that that's not an issue anymore for the patients.
Well, you know, which solves multitudes of problems.
Right,
obviously.
Because, you know, that's the basis of some people, you know, many women who are having that issue don't come up and talk about it because it's embarrassing, or they just feel like, you know, it's something that happens normally with their life and lifestyle. But I'm here to tell people that, you know, that's not something that you have to deal with or live with. And, you know, about 50 to 60% of women live with this and don't even say anything. So
that's unfortunate. So
right.
You're spreading the news that whatever your issues are, talk to your doctor about it. There may be things being able to be done now that couldn't have been done just a few years ago.
Exactly. And now with the advent of minimally invasive surgery, like I said, you can come in that morning, we can do the procedure, you can leave that afternoon or later on that day. The other thing too is that in some cases, we can do this without general anesthesia. So you don't have to be sleeping. You know, we can do it while you're awake. We can do these procedures, you know, very, very relaxed and calm. Sometimes these procedures take even 30 minutes and make a world of a difference.
This is all very exciting. Many of your answers are headline things, you know, and so exciting. Ovarian cancer is close to my heart and mind. It claimed my mother's life way too early. She was from that generation that never talked about anything below the waist. Mm-hmm. It was not discussed, and she didn't go to a doctor until it was way too late. In your technology, and when you go in with cameras and things, is there any hope that you might at least see some initial signs of ovarian cancer? It's still one of the most challenging cancers for women.
You're exactly right. Ovarian cancer, unfortunately, there is no good modality for screening for ovarian cancer. And unfortunately, with ovarian cancer, we often diagnose patients in stage 3, stage 4, yeah, at that point where it's little to almost too late to do anything. You know, the biggest thing is to talk to your doctor about different symptoms that you're feeling. Yeah. Because some of those symptoms that you might want to just shrug off may be, you know, something that your doctor wants to hear that make you, you know, a little bit, we want to pay a little bit closer attention to you. Some of those are, you know, bloating, decreased appetite, you know, any type of recent weight loss or weight gain, mm-hmm, nausea, fatigue, something that happens, you know, all of a sudden out of the blue. Stuff like that, you should also alert your doctor and let them know. But with laparoscopic surgery, whenever we enter a patient's abdomen, we make sure that we look at everything around to make sure that everything is okay and that we're taking care of our patients.
Are there markers, once someone does have ovarian cancer, are there markers where you can at least catch it a little earlier than you could in the past?
Right. So there are tumor markers, but I want to caution everyone when we're talking about tumor markers with the general public. These tumor markers are good for treatment reasons. So once we've diagnosed, you know, ovarian cancer with some patients, we usually like to use these tumor markers to see how our treatment is going. Sometimes these tumor markers can be elevated in even normal patients. And so because of that, I want to caution people not to normally get tumor markers done because it might be falsely elevated. Yes. And we don't want to scare anyone.
Well, I've already talked to you longer than we normally talk to doctors in this segment because it's so important. Newsworthy, as I said, headlines, and I'm a big fan of women, and I know you are too, and that's why you take such good care of them. Dr. Sachin Shenoy, thank you. We're glad you're at the University of Alabama, and we appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
To learn more from us about these and other important health topics, visit cchs.ua.edu, and for all your primary health care needs, visit University Medical Center, with locations in Tuscaloosa, Northport, Demopolis, Fayette, and Carrollton. Thanks for listening.